welcome. It is time for another Toolbox Tuesday.
Yeah, this is a huge topic we're going to go over, one that definitely is not going to be covered anywhere near in one sitting, but definitely going to start the process of talking about how to increase production through the exams, and which is obviously the biggest first step. So it's a huge topic.
If you've not been with us before, every Tuesday in our practices, our huddles are called Toolbox Tuesday, where we take one of the tools out of our hundreds of tools that we have available in our asset library, and we make sure that everyone is on the same page with these tools. So today we are starting a series on our exam flow and what that looks like in our practices, exam analysis and evaluation with our providers, with everyone having the ultimate goal of being $1 million plus producers and how we get there. And it starts with the exam. It starts before the patient, quite honestly, even walks in the door. So that's what we're going to get into today.
Absolutely. Let's go.
So I wanted to start with asking Sten a couple of questions about this, because we've gone through a couple of Sten's journeys of practice ownership and being a solo practitioner in some of these episodes in the past. But Sten, I just want to talk to start about what it looked like for you when you were a solo provider doing all of the exams on your own and what that exam process looked like for you.
There wasn't one, you know, and I think it's, you know, when you're, anytime you're a solo doc in a practice, to some extent, you're practicing in a silo, you know, I mean, and what, you know, I know people can argue that, hey, we go to conferences, we're parts of groups, parts of study clubs, you know, we have online communities, things like that, that we're members of, but there's not too many people that quite frankly tell the truth in those groups, right? And everything's all rosy and everything's going really well. I'm closing every case, doing a million all in X's, whatever it is. And I'm not saying that's everyone, but when we really look at what we're actually doing on a day-to-day basis, when we're practicing in a solo office, is we're left to be evaluated by ourselves and our team. And if we're not truly evaluating our own effectiveness, or our own progress, or our own skill set, honestly, and we don't have a relationship and we don't have a culture in our office where the team feels comfortable to give us some constructive feedback when they see it, because they know the end goal and we're all rowing in the same direction. If we haven't set that up yet, you're really not getting feedback, and you're really not understanding kind of where, what's working and what's not. And you're kind of just going in and you're reading the patient in the room, which is not bad. And I'm not saying that that's 100% bad, but anytime we're relying on ourselves or our own interpretation of how things are going, the progress is going to be much, much slower than if it was outside, or if there was an objective framework to evaluate it, a recording, a team member, an assistant that's you know, highly trained to work together, that you guys have the same mindset about how things should go. You know, those things are critical for having a really honest, any kind of honest feedback. So, you know, when I was, you know, by myself and working, you're really just looking at how you built rapport with the patient, right? I mean, all the scheduling almost was something that we really didn't pay attention to as much. Not say pay attention to, but I was really going up, hey, that exam went really well. I wouldn't even look at the scheduling. I would just walk in, do my next thing and say, hey, that exam went well, great. And then I'd look at who actually scheduled at the end of the day or at the end of the week, whatever it was. It definitely was not as frequent as it should have been. And you start pointing fingers, and, you know, and then rarely you point the finger at yourself. And not that I was, you know, singling people out or, you know, chastising and things like that, but trying to figure out, hey, what can other people do? I need a closer. I need someone to kind of close these cases, because I obviously had great rapport in my hygiene exam or in my periodic exam, whatever it was. So, you know, it couldn't have been my fault, because, you know, the patient was smiling and telling me, yes, doc, yes, doctor, yes, doctor, when that's about the worst indication of how an exam went of all time, right? Is kind of how the patient reacts there. So that was kind of one thing that was, you know, really took a outside influence for me, and I the coach and consultant, to kind of show me how, hey, this is how you need to do. You need to track your numbers. Numbers don't lie. You really need to start evaluating your exam effectiveness on the numbers and what schedules, not necessarily at how many smiles you got, or, you know, how many people, you know, say they're like enjoying hearing about vacations and kids and things like that, because none of that stuff matters. I mean, it matters to kind of build a relationship with people, but if that's your goal in practice, then this really probably is not the right topic, and honestly, the right place for you to learn about dentistry. And he goes, that's not what we're about. We're about producing and then getting the doctors to produce when they're in the exam and getting things, you know, getting $1 million plus on the schedule very, very quickly for them. Yeah.
Well, and I mean, on the flip side, I wasn't giving real constructive feedback either. Sten and I worked together for a very long time where I would be the closer of the case. And then I would tell him, you messed up that exam, but I didn't have actually objective talking points on what he could do better. Just, I had no idea what you were talking about. There were so many people that were saying like, oh, it's scheduling, but there wasn't an actual framework for what are some of the points that we should be hitting in these exams.
Right. I think that's a huge one. Because if you don't have any set framework, you're just improvising every single time, right? You're going in, most people are doing almost something completely different. They might think they're saying the same thing, going through the same story, whatever it is. And I had those little sound bites and I would kind of do and repeat, but they all go differently. They all go differently. And a little bit of that's not bad because you are trying to read the room, do some mirroring with patients, things like that. But there needs to be a framework to really be able to kind of fall back on that is going to work and that you can test things from there. Because otherwise you're just testing, you're not sure what worked and what didn't if you're testing 10 things at once, right?
Well, and this even became more crucial for us when we were looking at acquisitions because we heard time and time again from selling doctors, I have a great patient base, right? I have loyal patients. They've been with me for 30 years. Are they scheduling treatment? Are they just looking for cookies every time that they come in? Are they actually helping you achieve your production goals that you're trying to achieve?
Yeah, most
Now,
times
for
the lab that we saw too, and there nothing these the practices we saw a lot of times weren't doing some of the bigger cases, but they had outsized recall, and a lot of these patients had five, six, seven crowns on their chart for 5, 6 years,
Or we're watching them. Our
right?
favorite term, we're watching them.
What are you watching exactly?
So, Sam, when did this become very, very crucial at the point in your career to come up with a system for this?
Everything, I think almost everything, the inflection points in my career personally were where I got too busy to just wing it. And that happened very early in my first year out when I worked at a clinic. And that happened definitely, a couple of years after buying my own practice, partnering and then buying my own practice. And a little bit had to do with kind of, doing a lot more surgery, doing some more sedation, IV sedation, things like that. And it got to the point where I don't have time to go in and wing it. I need to get a set protocol. This is where I need to go. And not necessarily for my team. We always had SOPs and protocols and things like that with team and kind of what they follow. But I was the last one that had the SOP. I was the last one that had the protocol. And I don't know if that was a little bit of me not thinking I needed it, which was completely wrong, or not thinking that I was a part of the team and I had a team around me, but they were just all there to support me. Which I don't think is the right mindset either. I think that that's completely the opposite of way we do things in our practices. But it always came anytime I made a jump, I made an inflection point in kind of my productivity or efficiency. It was always at a need because I was too busy to not have it. And I either cut down the amount of cases I can do, which I that was not going to happen at that stage of my career because I was I was a go-getter and I wanted to do as much as I could, or I was going to have to hire someone else or hire another associate at the time. And I wasn't ready for that at the time either. So I had to get better. And I really kind of realized, and my team was kind of telling me this a lot too, is, you need to stop talking so much. I mean, stop chit-chatting, right? And I was going there and I would chit-chat. I thought the building rapport, talking about vacations, talking about kids, talking about all these different things. I was prioritizing that part of the exam. I'm not saying that's not an important part of the exam, but that needs to happen in concert with the rest of the exam, right? That can't happen first and then the exam. It has to kind of happen all together. So I really started to look at, okay, how can I shave some time off this and still get the most effectiveness, still get the most scheduling, still build the biggest, the best rapport with those patients, make a connection with them in the shortest amount of time and get the job done, let my facts be the hitman, show them what their issue was and get them to schedule. How can I do that as fast as possible? Because I don't have 20 minutes per exam. I'm shooting for 5 to 10 on every single exam, new patient or or periodic. And what I realize is that, and I think we've realized this in almost everything we've kind of, really made efficient, is the results, the numbers got better. And they 100% did. And maybe, there's some degree of, well, I was looking at the numbers a little more closely at that point because I needed to, in order to evaluate how I was doing with developing this efficiency so I could free up some time to do these bigger cases. But it really seemed like the numbers that we were tracking got better the more efficient we got our exams and the more, duplicatable those exam processes became.
If you went through our series last week, in the last couple of weeks, we talked about this a lot with our doctor scorecards. So you can go back and review that episode as well as far as how we track this. But I think it was a big realization also, and maybe a hard one, but patients are not coming to you to just chat, right? They're coming to you for a purpose. This is not going out to coffee with someone and having a full lunch hour and, like sensing, talking about vacations and whatnot. That was one of the feedback comments that we had from our team of every time you're talking about your vacation, a patient is coming back saying, oh, so that crown I'm paying for that patient, right? Oh, doc, I'm glad you had a nice time in Italy. I guess that that's why you recommended a crown for me, right? There has to be that separation where we talk about this all the time. We're friendly with our patients, but our patients are not friends. Yes, you may have personal friends who are patients in your practice, but I always, gave Sten a hard time because you have those patients that, I'm friends with Dr. Erickson, or when they're not pronouncing his name properly, I'm going, are you all really friends? His actual true friends don't say a word when they come in because it's a professional relationship. They expect to be treated like a regular patient would be treated and receive the same care and results, and it goes in both directions.
And I think that's, and there's a little bit of a antiquated vibe there from our, just the past of dentistry, where we see our patients more than just about any other professional. We do. Our regular patients, I should say, right? So, there is that thing that definitely attracts a lot of people to dentistry, is kind of building that relationship with people, seeing them over time, seeing their kids grow up, things like that. And 100% get it. I get it. But that cannot get in the way of efficiency and doing what you need to do to run an efficient and a proper business. And I, unfortunately, that what we see time and time again, and I saw it with myself, we see it with our associates initially sometimes, is that really gets in the way with, that's what they prioritize sometimes. That's what they think being successful is having patients come back every 6 months for 20 years, but really never getting that one crown done. But we had great conversations. I know all about their kids, their games, whatever it is. And you can have all that stuff, but keep in mind that you're prioritizing that and it might cannibalize the success of your practice a little bit.
And the second really big inflection point that I remember crystal clearly with this was when we did have an associate come on board. And yes, we had worked on establishing some of those protocols, but admittedly, they were not as strong as they needed to be. Sten and I had worked together for a very long time. We had a little bit of a shorthand going on. And, we joke about, I don't understand what Dr. Erickson's grunts are. I knew what his grunts were, but not ever, but that's not something you can put, in an SOP. And to the point of, we've talked about onboarding team members, and you have to be able to train your team on these protocols as well. You can't wait for the unicorn that's going to be with you for 40 years and knows every grunt that you make. When we hired our first associate, he had actually had some experience. This was not a new grad, had worked in a practice. So honestly, we assumed she already had her own exam process down. And we've had this come up multiple times since then with other associates who have been practicing for a number of years and then finding out, well, I actually didn't do the exams. I was just doing whatever treatment the owner doctor didn't want to do. So I don't know what I'm supposed to do from an exam standpoint. How do you do your exams? And all of a sudden we went, okay, we really have to have something here that we can translate to the associates to do the same way.
100%. And what you kind of realize is a lot of dentists, and even this one associate we're talking about too, the owner doctor really didn't have a process either. And some people, there are some people, and we've all worked with them, we've all seen them. They're just gregarious. They just have a way about them. They have, very good bedside manner. They can sell anything. They're just those people. But I guarantee you, those people that are like that, they might not think about it, but they have a repeatable process. And I think they might not have it written down. And if you ask them, they'd be like, I just go in and wing it. But if you really sat down and you looked at them, and I've really kind of watched some of these people, they really do have a repeatable process, and they waver a little bit here and there, but they've found this kind of this sequence of conversation, or when they bring things up, or different sound bites, or different verbiage and things like that that they use, and they're like a broken record, and they kind of go over and over and over again, and I mean, that's you need to kind of really keep in mind that if you see someone who says they don't have a protocol, but they're being successful at something, my guess is they just don't know they have a protocol, but they probably do. And we see that quite a bit too, because it's almost impossible to be successful or be efficient at something without some sort of framework to do. But I want to touch on too, and on Jennifer with the associate too, that was a big inflection point with kind of making sure that we had our exam process really nailed down and written down. But the other part of that was I could afford to be a little bit freeform with some of those exams sometimes, because you were presenting all my cases. And like you said, we had worked together for so long, we knew kind of what each other were going to say. I knew what you were going to say in the treatment presentation. You knew what I was going to say in the exam. Even if we weren't in the same room, you had a very, very good idea about how that conversation went. And I had a very, very good idea about how that conversation was going to go if I said ABC. Jennifer moved up the ranks in her office very quickly for obvious reasons. I knew very quickly that she's not going to be able to present all these cases. And we needed to have that exam process not duplicatable on just the doctor side, but on the treatment presentation side to for the team member too. Because if she's going in and saying, "Hey, just do what I do, just watch me," and then duplicate that, that doesn't work. This needs to be written down. They need to rehearse it. There needs to be kind of a structure to it, so that someone can go in and they can follow exactly. They can follow a recipe about how to do this treatment presentation. And then once you get this down, then you add in your own little freeform. You add your little sound bites. You can go off script a little bit, because that's your that sounds more natural when you say it. But you can't do that right off the bat. And so I think writing that down for not only me but for you and for the treatment presenter was a huge, huge change too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So on that note, I mean, Jennifer, when we were kind of going through, and I can't remember the exact year, kind of what we're talking about, when we really started to kind of fine-tune this process, and when we always had protocols for all of our clinical aspects and things like that, and billing and stuff like that. But I think the exam was probably one of the last ones that we actually sat down and really got a hardcore system protocol written down. This is the way it goes. So, on that note, but when there was me, the doctor, our new associate that needed to have a followed script, and then translating that to now you having a followed script for the other team members that we're going to present when our team grew, and our the number of people presenting treatment plans grew. I mean, what was the feedback from the people when you first started coaching them on that and implementing those things?
It was not comfortable at first by any stretch of the imagination. And, like all things, you're going to have objections. We've talked about objections a lot. No matter what you do, the first time you change something, people's automatic response is going to be, I can't do this. And the doctors are the same way, right? Hey, my exam process is working, but is it really, to Sten's point of if you have a successful protocol or you have an unsuccessful protocol, you have some kind of protocol. One of the biggest objections that still just irks me, it still happens, we still have to correct this. I'm not you, Jennifer. I'm not Dr. Erickson, is that excuse? Yeah, you're right. And right? It shouldn't, we joke about it from an assisting standpoint that a doctor shouldn't even know, we're exaggerating, but they shouldn't even know who's assisting with them. They should just have hands and it's the same experience regardless of the assistant. It should be the same from a treatment presentation standpoint. So initially it was very difficult. We had some really tough, I make them do role playing and I usually am the patient and I'm a caring patient. I'm going to throw every nasty thing at them that they can, because they need to be prepared for it, right? Expect that the patient is going to have objections about finances. Do I really need this? All of those things so that they're ready to answer it. The role playing is very difficult. I make them do role playing with each other. But again, if you can't do this with your team members who you are with every day, you're not going to be able to do this with a patient out of the blue. So after we started to work through some of those kinks and get everyone comfortable with this, they really saw the forest through the trees on this, that all of a sudden, instead of having every single exam with every doctor be different, they were picking up on the cues. They knew what to expect. They knew one of the pathway isms that we have in our practices is passing the baton. If you're passing the baton to someone, we look at all things like we're doing a relay. If you don't know who has the baton, that means no one has the baton. There has to be a very clear handoff between doctors and assistants, and then assistants to the treatment There has to be a very clear handoff between doctors and assistants, and then assistants to whoever is presenting the treatment plan if they're not doing the treatment presentation themselves. All of these little steps that we're creating a lot of friction and stress, quite honestly, throughout the course of the day, suddenly we're relieved. And then if there was a breakdown in the system of the exam, we knew where to dial in that part. Hey, the patient really wasn't clear on what the next steps were in treatment. Or, hey, doctor, as the assistant, I have no idea what you were talking about, which meant that your patient also had no idea what you were talking about, right? We got lost in scientific terminology, that kind of thing. So we really started to dial these in. And now, I mean, if a doctor is going off script with something, they're calling it out right off the bat. Like, I mean, nicely, yep. Sometimes even in front of a patient, the cue, hey, doctor, I need you to repeat what the treatment priorities are. That's really a virtual kick in the shin. You lost me. I don't know what you were talking about, which means your patient didn't either. So and then they started to see the results, right? Then they started to see us gain some traction. And just like all things, it all had the team start rowing in the same direction. Too often it's if a case scheduled, it was the doctor's triumph. The doctor did everything right. They did exactly what they were supposed to do. If a case didn't schedule, it was the team's fault. The team sunk that treatment plan, and neither of those things are true. Like we talked about, you know, a patient's experience and their acceptance for the treatment starts really before they even meet the doctor. It starts with their interaction from the team, from scheduling to what that first appointment looks like before the doctor is even in the room. Everyone has to be rowing in the same direction.
Yeah. And I think the team, like you said, the team, you know, everyone's interpretation is that, you know, every appointment, every filling, crown, exam, it is different.
Right. And they can be if you make them that way.
It can be if they make them that way. But the problem, you know, and it's, you know, in the novice's eyes, there's many options. In the expert's mind, there's one, right? And, you know, I think, you know, the more things that we need fit into our protocols, the more successful we're going to be. And patients want that too. They seeing a system and seeing something that's repeatable, you know, having something that seems like your team and you have done it a million times that day before lunch,
right,
is impressive, right? And we're not talking about having a mill. We're not talking about a clinic where you're just, you know, it's a chop shop. That's absolutely not what we're talking about. But having something down where everyone knows the next step, everyone's flowing together, everyone's working together, it's a system, and it's very obvious that it's a system and it's practiced, is impressive. And it makes people feel comfortable in our experience
right,
with the treatment that are going to get done, and that things right, are going to be handled right with their case and their family's case.
Right. Yeah. No, absolutely. You know, they say all the time, they joke about, you know, Starbucks is not the best coffee in the world, but no matter where you go, it's reliable. You know right, what to expect, you know what to get, you know what the service is going to be. And there is absolutely comfort in that. Dentistry is expensive. And some of the aesthetic cases maybe, but most people are not coming in super excited that they're going to drop $1,000, $2,000, whatever it's going to be for a crown. This is not their idea of a good time. So they need to see the benefits and that, yes, you have selected the office. You're going to be in the right hands with those practitioners.
Right.
Well, this is just part one of this series. Next week, we're going to be continuing talking about some of the breakdown of what that exam process actually looks like for our providers that everyone is on the same page with. So come back next week to continue in this conversation. In the meantime, you can connect with us at our email, connect@pathwaydentalsolutions.com. Our website is also pathwaydentalsolutions.com. And if you would like to join our community, we have our weekly newsletter that is going out as well. So you can sign up for that there. And we are on all of the social platforms. So feel free to reach out, and we will be back next week.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.